Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Sabah Muslim. My name is Faisal Patel. Yes, the big picture of this morning, a myriad of small errors here and there, but enjoyable nonetheless. But now to give us the big picture, we're joined by Brother A.B. Dawji. Assalamu alaikum, Mr. Dawji, or should I say, Assalamu alaikum, Mr. Dawji.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I was trying my Mandela impression there. Let me try it again.
I want to say. It was a great pleasure. So respected to you all.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure to be with you today. Let's go on to the story that caught your eye, Brother A.B. Dawji, this week.
You know, I always say that the world is never short of mamparas. They pop up all over the place, ulus of various shades. Mukhus who take themselves too seriously. And for the first story, we go next door to Zimbabwe. But before I get to the weird story, let me tell you about a headline that I read that made me, it made me fall off my chair.
Gee.
Now, here's the question. How do you know that our economy is doing badly? The answer is when Zimbabweans refuse to accept the South African rand. I kid you not. I actually read this as a headline in the business section of our newspaper, The Mercury. Our currency is going up and down so badly, like a yo-yo, that people can't keep up with the exchange rate. Even I have a problem, Sheikh. The last few hair on my head are threatening to fall off.
I just need to ask, is it a Coke yo-yo or a Sprite yo-yo?
Well, the hair is about to fall off with all the stress that I get from monitoring the rand. I have to transfer money overseas to my agents for the tours and so on, and my nerves are absolutely shot. The little profit that I calculate that I will make just evaporates when the rand is converted to dollars or euros and so on. Every morning when I open my eyes, the first thing that I look at is not my Ruksana. No, it's my cell phone to see where the rand is standing today. Actually, I haven't seen my wife for months now. Anyway, let's go to the weird story from Zimbabwe.
Gee.
Recently, Zimbabwe had a beauty contest. So what's so interesting about that, I hear you ask?
Gee.
Well, let's put it this way. It was actually a contest to find the ugliest man in Zimbabwe. Don't laugh. You know, it's all very serious stuff, Habibi.
Uh-huh.
35 contestants took part in the Mr. Ugly contest. The contest was won by 42-year-old Maison Sere. His photograph is in all the papers. His main, shall I say, feature
got him
the title of Mr. Ugly was his teeth. Now, how can I describe them? His teeth looked like a fence made out of wattle poles that were knocked down by a truck. But the contest did not end very well. The person who came second, William Masvim, had won the title for the past 4 years. And so he was very cross. He said that he is uglier than the winner. He said, I am a naturally ugly guy. He, the winner, is ugly only when he opens his mouth. Another loser, Patrick Mpereki, said, this is cheating. Do we have to lose our teeth to win? And then the tamasha started. Here's a report from Sky News. The story actually made the headlines all over the world.
I'm surprised that actually people are fighting over competition to see who's the ugliest.
Well, fighting is the word because the mob then began pushing and shoving and insults at the judges. Luckily, the chaos did not result in injuries. Unemployed Mr. Sere, who won, described his critics as sore losers who, in his words, should just accept I'm uglier than them. Happily pocketing the $500 prize money, he said he was now hoping for a television contract. He said, I already moved around schools performing and showcasing my ugliness, so this is a chance to make it on TV.
What is the world coming to, eh? And let me ask, what
to be made from being ugly and lots of job opportunities. So, dear listeners, if you have a face that looks like you walked into a wall, don't despair. You could be rich and famous, okay? Now, I was just wondering, Habibi, about what Mr. Sere said in his response, that he had already signed contracts to appear on TV.
Mm.
Good heavens. I wonder what the soapy will be called. I think maybe The bold and the ugly.
Or the ugly truth. What about the money that you won? Is that Zim dollars or US dollars?
They don't say,
The war on ISIS, every ISIS seems to be taking a slap front, right and center. What's the war on ISIS?
You know, there are lots of different things that are happening, and the issue of ISIS or Islamic State around this whole issue.
Yeah.
But before I go further, let me read to you from an article which I came across this morning by a well-known writer on Palestinian issues, Rachel Shabi. This is what she says. She says, look, it might seem like a silly obsession with Arabic pronunciations, but it speaks to something bigger and more telling. As the British Parliament launched into its 10-hour debate today on whether to launch airstrikes against the Islamic State group in Syria, the first thing many noticed was the Prime Minister David Cameron and subsequent MPs had all switched to calling the group by its Arabic acronym Daesh. And then the next thing we noticed was how nobody could say it properly. We had baffling attempts like Dash and Daesh and Daesh and Daesh. It got so bad that Middle East Eye, that is the news service, in an attempt both to help the parliamentarians and put the rest of us out of our misery, issued this handy audio guide to pronouncing it properly. So there was a website mentioned there, and she provides the link to the audio. I went earlier on today to hear how the word is pronounced. Dear listeners, this is how you say it. Daesh, Daesh. Did you get it? Daesh. It's two syllables. The first part is easy. Da, like the first part of Dawji.
But, Brother Abi Dawji, when it comes to ISIS...
To be more accurate, you must think of what you are going to be eating today, and that is dal. So take the first part of that, da, and then add the popular, unique South African expression when one is irritated or frustrated or surprised or just amused. And what's that word? Aish. So put that together, the first part of dal and the word aish, and there you have it. Daesh.
I think it will be more like aish. What is ISIS doing?
Who said that the big picture was not an educational program?
Absolutely.
And so, dear listeners, the big debate took place in the British Parliament, and the Prime Minister, David Cameron, sounded like Tony Blair, the useless. By the way, I came across some surprising news about Phony Blair and the fairy tale about weapons of mass destruction. It says that Tony Blair went to war in Iraq despite a report by South African experts with unique knowledge of the country that showed it did not possess weapons of mass destruction, according to a book published on Sunday. I think you mentioned the book earlier today.
Gee.
God, Spies and Lies by South African journalist John Matheson described how then-President Thabo Mbeki tried in vain to convince both Blair and President George Bush that toppling Saddam Hussein in 2003 would be a terrible mistake. Mbeki's predecessor, Nelson Mandela, also tried to convince the American leader, but was left fuming and said, President Bush doesn't know how to think. Mbeki, who enjoyed positive relations with both Blair and Saddam, asked for the team to be granted access. Saddam agreed and gave the South African team the freedom to roam unfettered throughout Iraq. On their return, they reported that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They knew where the sites in Iraq had been and what they needed to look like. But there were now none in Iraq. In January 2003, Mbeki, who succeeded Mandela as president, sent a team to Washington to explain the findings, but with little success. Mbeki himself then met Blair for 3 hours in London on February 1st. He warned that the wholesale removal of Saddam's Ba'ath Party could lead to a national resistance to the occupying coalition forces. But with huge military deployments already underway, Blair's mind was clearly made up. When Frank Chikane, Director General in the President's office, realized that the South Africans would be ignored, it was, in his words, one of the greatest shocks of my life. So there you have it, dear listeners, the South African connection to the war in Iraq. But the best part for me in this article was the comment by Nelson Mandela. President Bush doesn't know how to think. Anyway, back to the British Parliament. Things got really heated. It was a 10-hour debate, and David Cameron made a really below-the-belt comment that those who opposed him, his intention to bomb ISIS in Syria, are terrorist sympathizers. Wow, that was quite shocking and crude. And, of course, opposition MPs are very cross and are lining up to demand an apology for this disgusting smear. David Cameron must have read Tony Blair's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People with Double Whopper Lies and Deceit. The story is this. Britain has been bombing Iraq. Now Cameron wants to bomb Daesh in Syria. And why? Because, as he says, there are 70,000 moderate fighters in Syria that need air support, that is, support from British fighter jets. 70,000 moderate fighters, what does that mean? Firstly, how does David Bai, or Dawood Bai, arrive at this figure of 70,000? Did they take some form of a census? Did a whole lot of young people with clipboards and forms stop people in the streets or knock on their doors and say, sir, are you a moderate? Do you keep only 15 fast? And do you wash only one hand and one leg when you're making wuzu? And do you read one rakat in your namaz? Well, David Cameron said that there are 70,000 moderate fighters. And Robert Frist said, you are talking absolute sheer nonsense. You know, I like his articles. He wrote one this week. And of course, he used his usual caustic pen, not pulling any punches. Gee. And this is what he said. He said, Tony Blair went to war in Iraq despite... No. He said, telling the House of Commons about 70,000 moderate fighters deployed in Syria was not just lying in the sense that Tony Blair lied, because Blair persuaded himself to believe in his own dishonesty. But something approaching burlesque. It was whimsy, ridiculous, comic, grotesque, ludicrous. It came across to a unique form of tragic pantomime. At one point last week, one of Cameron's satraps was even referring to this phantom army as ground troops. I doubt if there are 700 active moderate foot soldiers in Syria. And I'm being very generous, for the figure may be nearer 70, let alone 70,000. Besides, aren't the moderates supposed to be the folk who don't carry weapons at all? Who's ever heard before of a moderate with a Kalashnikov? Yet in the Commons last week, we were supposed to believe this tomfoolery, all in the cause of launching two or three fighter bombers against ISIS in Syria. It wouldn't make us more vulnerable, David told us. In fact, we were already vulnerable because we were bombing ISIS in Iraq. Yet Dave knows, and we all know, don't we, that ISIS will most assuredly try to commit an atrocity in Britain to revenge Dave's latest schoolboy adventure. Then, a la Blair, after 7-7, they will insist that ISIS are killing us because they hate our values. Then will come the inevitable video of a suicide killer saying he killed our innocents because Dave sent his miniature Air Force to bomb ISIS. So, there you are. It's a longish article, but a really good read, and it was in my newsletter, which I'm sure all of you are receiving every day. Absolutely. That's why you are so well informed. Let's quickly look at the other...
Yeah, what's happening in Palestine, Brother Ebi Dawji? We understand that they are seeking justice after Palestinians burned to death.
Okay, are you running out of time?
No, it's fine. You can go ahead, G.
Okay, because I was just going to finish off this whole day story.
No, you can go ahead, inshallah.
Well... What do you think of what I just said about this? Anyway, here's another story. It's also related to Daesh. And it says here that France is likely to close up to 160 mosques in the coming months as part of a nationwide police operation under the state of emergency, which allows places of worship that promote radical views to be shut down. One of the country's chief imams has said... So there you have it. What do you think of that? Muslim leaders working with French government to close down so-called radical mosques. Oh, by the way, over the past few days, the climate change conference took place in Paris. My only comment about the conference is that it was just a lot of hot air. Did you get that? Let's try again. The climate change conference in Paris was just a lot of hot air. Okay, I see you didn't have your badam milk this morning. Anyway, related to that, you heard of lactose intolerance. Some people who drink milk or milk products get an instant case of load shedding, that is the running stomach. Wimpy in town is very far from his bingo, and if I have a milkshake, I got to drive very fast to get home. Right, so we have lactose intolerance, but I just coined a new expression, and that is badam dood deprived, or BDD. One chap who is severely BDD is Donald Trump. This clown makes Mamparas look like towering intellectuals. So why lactose intolerance gives you diarrhea? Badam dood deprived syndrome gives you verbal diarrhea. The same thing that comes out from one end also comes out from the other. So what did our genius say? Interviewed on Fox TV, he said, and I think we're running out of time, aren't you?
No, it's all right. You can go ahead, inshallah. We can get it.
All right. Correct. Okay. Anyway, this character here, Mampara, he says, ISIS is our number one threat. I would knock the hell out of them. I like to do one thing at a time. And asked about the possibility of civilian casualties, Trump initially pointed to civilians being used as human shields before suggesting the families of terrorists should be targeted. He said, I would do my best, absolute best. I mean, one of the problems we have, or one of the reasons why we're so ineffective, you know, they're using them as shields. It's a horrible thing. But we're fighting a very politically correct war, and the one thing is, with the terrorists, you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. They care about their lives. Don't kid yourself. But they say they don't care about their lives. You have to take out their families. What was all that about? I will not comment on that. I hope this Ullu becomes the President of the United States. He will kill more people in the world than George Bush and Barack Obama. No, he won't use bullets and bombs. People will just die laughing from the stupid things that he says. And, alright, I suppose you want to cross over to Palestine.
Yeah, what's happening in Palestine? I see they are seeking justice after Palestinians were burned to death.
They arrested a couple of people. But, you know, let me just say something else. When a family has a deep and dark secret that they wish to hide from the rest of the world, the only way that this secret can get out is if that son or daughter-in-law is fed up with that family, with something there, and he's very cross about that, and he then will spill the beans to others. When he's having mutias at his mother's house because his mother-in-law can't cook mutias, he will say, Ma, you know what? Don't tell anyone, but my mother-in-law goes every Sunday to the Suncoast Casino. She says that she only goes there to see Indian movies, but my friend saw her gambling at the table. So bad, eh? But don't tell anyone. And guess what? Within 5 hours, 25 people will get the news, and each one will be warned, hey, don't tell anyone, I don't want to make gibbet, but that Fatih, hey, she's a big gambler. So, dear listeners, I also got some inside information about a certain prominent family. Don't tell anyone, okay? The brother-in-law of Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to me this week. Well, actually, to be honest, he didn't speak to me directly. He was speaking on Al Jazeera. And what did he say? Well, what he said amazed me. Briefly, he said that he has had many discussions with Netanyahu, lots of very serious and sometimes even heated discussions. He said that Netanyahu does not believe in a two-state solution. Did you get that? Netanyahu does not believe at all in a two-state solution. Netanyahu told him that he just says these things to the world to make it appear that he is committed to this and therefore to peace also. Netanyahu also told him that he says that he believes in a two-state solution but puts huge obstacles in place, very big demands that he knows that the Palestinians cannot agree to. So in a way, that explains why Netanyahu says to the Palestinians, we can only start negotiations, we can only start talking with you once you accept that Israel is a Jewish state. Of course, he knows that the Palestinians leaders would never accept this. And one more thing, The brother-in-law says, he told Netanyahu, you must be honest, speak the truth, and tell the world that you don't believe in the two-state solution, and that all of this land belongs to the Jews. Well, Habibi, I wonder if the rest of the world took note of the secret that the brother-in-law revealed. If they did, then surely they will do what they always do, and that is turn a deaf ear. Act as if they didn't hear anything.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
General Koos Vermaak is in charge of the Navy in Simonstown.
Gee.
And he was on a visit to Pretoria, and he went over to the Army headquarters there in Pretoria. There he was introduced to the chief of the Army, General Simon Ngubane. While they were sort of walking around and chatting, General Vermaak asked General Ngubane, so, how are your men? And Ngubane replied, they are very well trained. And Vermaak said, I hope so. You see, in my Navy, my men are very well trained. They are the bravest men in the country. And Ngubane replied, hey, my men are also very, very brave. And Vermaak said, okay, I'd like to see that. So Ngubane shouts to one of his men passing by, hey, Private Vusi, come here. You see that big tank coming here? I want you to stand in front of it and stop it with your body. And Private Vusi replied, hey, boss, you crazy. That tank will kill me. You must be a mampara to tell me to do that. How? Foot check, eh? Foot check, wena. So, saying that, Vusi ran away. And Ngubane was very embarrassed. He turned to Vermaak and said, you see that? You have to be very brave to speak to a general like that.
Well, Ebi Dawji, anything else that that caught your eye before we conclude, inshallah?
I don't know the response from you.
No. I'm just trying to feel. I mean, you know, we see weird and wonderful stories as a journalist on a daily basis. Yeah.
A sailor from the Navy went to Pretoria. He arrived there very late. All the hotels were full. He went from one place to another, nothing at all. Then he came to a bed and breakfast place. He pleaded with the manager. The manager said, okay, I have a bed for you. In fact, I have a double room, but one bed is already occupied by a very big army guy. I'm sure he won't mind sharing the cost of the room with you. But I must warn you, this guy, he stayed here yesterday and he snores very loudly, so loud that the people in the next room complained to me. And the sailor said, no problem, I'll take the room. Next morning he was having breakfast and the manager asked him, so how did you sleep? And the sailor replied, very well actually. And the manager asked, how come? And the sailor replied, well, you know, when I entered the room, this fellow was already in bed snoring away, one way, snoring loudly. I went over to him, I gave him a kiss on the cheek and I said, good night, beautiful. He sat up the whole night watching me.
You know how to make a Friday, Brother Ebi Dawji. You really do know how to make a Friday.
Well, I lost you on the first one, eh?
No, you did. Yeah, I was,
looking at the screen there, I know that. I'm wondering when your next guest, whether he's online, right?
No. You know what, listen, I wanted to ask you, man, you've seen that story about the hippo killing those three people in Limpopo?
Yes.
What's your comments on that?
Well, I'll have to think about that one.
But anyway, Brother Ebi Dawji, Jazakallah so much. Inshallah, Mulana Rawat will be back next week to again speak to you. Jazakallah for your time on
Jazakallah khair,
Sabah Muslim this morning.
Right, sir.
Wa alaikum salam.